Greetings, everybody. That was a song inviting, invoking all the guiding spirits, all the beloved friends and angels and helpers to join us in this practice of kirtan. I was singing Siyaram Ame Sabajagajani. That means I see Sita, the infinite goddess, the divine beloved of the universe, and I see Ram, the all-pervading, unmanifest source of all creation. In every face I see, in every pair of eyes I look into, I see Sita and I see Ram. So therefore I say namaste, I say hi, I say welcome to you all, welcome to Sita, welcome to Ram. And I sang Om Guru, Om Guru. I was asking my guru and the universal guru principle, that energy that guides us all to the light. I was asking that guru to come sing through me, sing through all of us, to teach us and take us to the light. Many, many centuries ago in India, great beings who were called rishis or knowers developed systems to bring the human being into direct contact with higher planes of existence, as well as to bring them into harmony with this plane of existence, with their own bodies, own minds, own lives. And these systems were called yoga. They were practices to harmonize the energies of the body, to become more in tune with nature, the natural forces, and to calm the mind, and to tune the mind, and to focus the breath. And most of these practices have been lost. Nowadays, people think of yoga as a system of exercises, but it was much, much more than that. The yogis of old recognized that one of the big components of a human being is their heart, the center of emotions. We can tune our body like crazy, we can become super smart, but what about the emotions? They seem to rise and fall, they seem to go like waves of the sea. We never know what's going to happen with our emotions. We try to control them, we try to suppress them. But the yogis, those old yogis, knew that that wasn't really the way. They knew that these emotions were a crucial part of bringing the human being to divine consciousness. They knew that these emotions were not a mistake. And they said, rather than getting rid of them, use these emotions. These are your fuel. These are your energy. This is what God gave you to speak to God. And they created Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti is usually defined as devotion, but I think that in the West we have a very narrow vision of what that means. Devotion to us is usually submission and subservience, But in India, where this tradition comes from, the word bhakti, I would say it would be more accurate to define it as relationship, as one's relationship with the divine, one's relationship with one's soul, one's relationship with the infinite universe. And all the emotions that come into play in that relationship are perfectly valid emotions to be utilized in bhakti yoga. You know, when we're in love with somebody, love is not a monochromatic feeling. For those of us who've ever been in love, we know that there's so many colors, there's so many shades. We have passion, we have fear, a lot of fear in love. We have jealousy, we have desire, we have lust, we have longing, we have ecstasy, and we have the absolute bliss of that moment when the individual self dissolves into the great oneness. All those are sides of love. So in bhakti yoga, we embrace the full spectrum of emotions. And there's many practices in bhakti. The yogis of old, their thinking was so big. There was no limitations. There was no tunnel vision in what they taught. They said, you can dance with God. You can make food for God. You can make love with God. You can write poetry to God. You can paint pictures to God, paint pictures of God. And who is God anyway but the entire manifest creation? But most of all, or maybe best of all, you can sing to God. And that's where kirtan came from, which is what you'll be hearing on this album and what we'll be doing together as you listen to the CD. Kirtan is the repetition of the many, many names of God, the many, many names of the goddess. In Hinduism, which is the tradition that this practice comes from, all the names are considered powerful, powerful mantras, ancient, ancient tools to unlock that mysterious, unknown canyon of feelings within. And it almost doesn't matter which name we chant, which mantra we sing, it's all a vessel for our unspoken prayers to sail into the river, to the source of the river, to the divine, infinite cosmic source. So kirtan has been practiced for ages and ages and ages. I imagine that over the centuries, the music has changed. A lot of what I do has very modern music. And yet the mantras, the words that I sing, are words that have been sung for centuries and centuries and centuries by people calling for God, by people laughing in ecstasy, by people crying in despair, by people just sitting and patiently, patiently saying God's name over and over and over again to create a connection from their own heart to that great, great heart. Most of us are not used to singing. Most of us are self-conscious about singing. Most of us are very inhibited about singing. And likewise, most of us don't really know how to express our emotions. We have a limited range that's permitted in our lives that we've been conditioned to feel comfortable with. But wow, we have so much inside of us. And the more that we express, the more that we open up, the more that we release, the richer our lives are, the richer our hearts are. And singing is such an amazing tool for unlocking the emotions. It seems that the singing voice, enriched with a full breath, directly touches that well of emotions inside. And we sing, you know, first we're a little shy, usually. I feel a little shy almost every time I sing at first. And then you get into it and gradually the window opens, the window of feelings, the window of the heart opens and opens and opens. And the more we can give up our inhibitions, the more we can give up our self-judgment, you know, worrying about what we sound like, the deeper and more profound the experience can be. For some of us, this practice of kirtan is gonna seem very strange and very new and very exotic. And I just would like to invite everybody to try it, to make an experiment, and put the analytical mind outside for a minute, if possible. And you just sing a little bit. The most important thing is not to critique your experience. Whatever we're feeling is absolutely valid, is absolutely perfect. Sometimes I put my hand on my heart and I can feel the vibration that my voice makes on the heart center. And as I put my hand there and feel the energy there, it wakes up a little bit more and I sing a little bit more and I sing outward. And at the same time, I sing inward very softly into that place, into that great, great ocean of divine feelings that's inside of me. And when I say divine feelings, I mean all feelings, human, divine. Why do we conceive that there's a difference? I first was exposed to kirtan when I was a teenager in New York. I lived in Manhattan, and I heard some albums of Indian folk music and Indian devotional music, as well as Indian classical music. And it just grabbed me. It just lit me up, just the sounds, the voices, and most of all, the unbearable yearning I heard in the singing. And so when I was 19, I went to India. And of course, lots of amazing things happened to me. But the most amazing thing was that I met a great, great Indian saint, an Indian guru named Neem Karoli Baba. And he was a very, very simple man in some ways. He just wore a blanket and sat around on a wooden bench and laughed and talked and repeated the name of God. He repeated Ram, 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 Ram. But his presence was so powerful and so magnetic that it really turned my whole insides around and really started me on a different path in my life. All around Maharaji were people singing kirtan. You would hear it in the distance, you would hear it down the road, you would hear it out of loudspeakers. And this music was so passionate and so moving to me that I always wanted to hear more and I always wanted to learn more of it. And meanwhile, I was sitting around with this man who was an incarnation of vast, vast love. The blessings of a great spiritual being just touch one's heart in a way that can't be described. And hearing the kirtan all the time gave me a way that I could express what was happening inside of my heart. On top of it all, my guru, Maharaji, loved kirtan. And I felt that when we were singing, we were giving something to him. We were giving something to that universal spirit, because we get everything. We're given food, we're given breath, we're given our lives by God. So really, what can we give back? Maharaji blessed me with bhakti, and he planted within me the seeds of bhakti and gave me the tools to water those seeds. And I feel very lucky to be able to share this with all of you. Some of us might find it a little bit off-putting to sing songs to thousands of different gods and goddesses. Gods with elephant heads, monkey gods, goddesses with eight arms, and goddesses riding on swans, on and on and on, which is so much part of the Hindu tradition. But why should we think of God any different than we think of ourselves and our loved ones and all the people we know? As human beings, we have so many different facets, so many different faces, so many different ways of being in the world, so many different colors inside of us. And isn't it the same for God? I think the universal being, the universal oneness, manifests in a zillion ways so that we can relate to him, her, with all the different emotions that are inside of us. One of my favorite deities, one of my best friends, is the monkey god Hanuman. Hanuman is such a vast, mysterious being. He's very hard to describe in just a few words. Hanuman is the symbol of absolute selfless devotional service. Hanuman will do anything for God, to serve God. And Hanuman also is a ferocious, ferocious, ferocious warrior, the enemy of the demons of ignorance, of ego. There's many ways of understanding all the deities in Hinduism. Hanuman is the son of the wind god, and he's known as the breath of Ram, the life force, of the cosmic energy to connect us with God, with the infinite. One of the most popular gods in India, and one of the most popular Indian gods in the West, is Ganesha, the elephant god. Ganesha is always invoked at the beginning of any endeavor, at the beginning of any project, because he's the remover of obstacles, and he's the bestower of wisdom and the bestower of divine knowledge, and he's very, very patient. Ganesha also represents the earth element, the root. You know, it's said that how can we move forward before we've made friends with our root, with our foundation. We also have several kirtans on this CD to Radha and Krishna, to Radhe and Govinda, to Radhe Shyam. Radha and Krishna are the divine lovers. Radha is the goddess, the embodiment of all the flavors and all the aromas of love. When the heart is absolutely in full bloom and the lotus flowers are dripping with juice, that's Radha. And Krishna, or Govinda, or Shyam, is the unmanifest, absolute source of creation. But when we think of Radha and Krishna, when we think of Radhe Govinda, Radhe Shyam, we think of the really romantic aspects of human emotions, the place in us which longs to meet our beloved, which longs to meet our lover, which will walk away from all of our material attachments to come face to face and embrace our beloved. When Krishna played his flute, everyone who heard the sound of that flute lost all attachment to the worldly existence. It went up into smoke, into vapor, and they followed him and became Radha. In India, in the areas where Radha and Krishna are worshipped, people all refer to each other as Radhe. Radhe is another way of saying Radha. They say, hey, Radhe. They don't say Joe, John, Mary. They say Radhe, 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 and greet each other as the goddess, as the beloved, as the lovers of Krishna, because we are all the lovers of God. We are all the beloveds of God. All creation is the goddess longing for reunion with God. And then there's Lord Shiva, the destroyer, the primordial energy of transformation. Shiva, Hara, Mahadeva, all the different names of Shiva, Nataraj, Shivaraj, all different names that point to that great, great tidal wave of transformation, that great wind of change, that great fire. Shiva is that transforming force. Shiva is called the destroyer because he wipes the slate clean so that new writing can be written. He destroys everything so that rebirth can occur instantly. And that happens within us every second, every millisecond. Creation, preservation, destruction. Om Namah Shivaya. On this CD, we have a song to Kali and we have a song to Durga, both aspects of the wrathful goddess who is the wife of Lord Shiva. We see pictures of Kali and pictures of Durga charging into the battle with their weapons held high and ferocious expressions on their face. Kali waves a sword and it's dripping with the blood of the severed head of ego. Sometimes the mother needs to manifest in such a wrathful form because the power of our ego is so strong, so tenacious, and so tricky. But it's all to bring us to liberation. It's all to help us become free. They say that when one really looks into the eyes of Kali, all the scariness and all the ugliness turns into a face of absolute beauty and absolute light. I guess to me, the essence of bhakti, the true heart of this practice, is surrender. Every time I sing, whether I'm singing to Krishna, Shiva, Hanuman, Ram, I say a prayer. May my personal will, my ego, be absorbed in the will of the Great One, of the Great Universal Consciousness. May I offer to you my motives, my desires, my dreams, everything. Not my will, but thy will be done. To me, that's the heart of all of this. And when I sing, I think of my guru, who, for me, is a channel into the world within the heart.